Some podcasts inspire their listeners. Some podcasts address important current events. Some podcasts make the world a better place. The Fish Golf Broadcast does the opposite. So buckle up for half an hour of wasted time. In this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I got to sit down with Zach Melton. Zach, what you thinking about?
First initial thoughts. Super happy to be here. Also, that's a terrible name.
You are a guest here.
It should
be. You're not even taking off your shoes. You're just stomping on my couch. Do you know what you want when you look in the fridge?
It should be called the Fish is Late Podcast.
Explain.
Well, I waited all day for you.
I mean, I tried to give you advance notice that I was going to be late. Okay. Part of the life of being a touring disc golfer is that home is really important, right? But you never have enough time at home to take care of the projects that you need to. Like, I know you love to go home between every single tournament when you can, right?
Of course. But I really love to just like tear my knee up. That way I'm home for like a month and then I can get all this stuff done that I've been putting off.
I think you got an excuse not to do that stuff.
Oh man, I don't.
Tough day on the couch, just rehabbing, icing, stretching.
Yeah, having to move from the recliner to the couch and then back.
That's like a long way.
Between movies or shows, it's exhausting.
Yeah, and important to catch up on your mid-2010s CBS shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, movies, sports movies. Been looking up baseball movies recently. I've watched Bull Durham twice since I've been home.
Okay. Sports movies are nearly always bad, right?
Like, they're bad, but I love them. Like to me, they're good. But like, if you were to objectively be like, is this a good movie? They're gonna be like, this it's so bad. That's probably like a 42 on Rotten Tomatoes. I feel like.
But yeah, for sure.
There's a few exceptions. Remember the Titans?
I think that holds up only because of like the nostalgia of bus trips, right?
Yeah. Kids don't get that. They don't understand it. They didn't live that life.
Glued to their phones. Yeah, this younger generation.
Yeah, like I don't know if I'm gonna play with my iPad on this trip or my phone. Like I don't know. It's like
whatever happened to, you know, passing notes and
dancing to Vanilla Ice on the radio? Ice Baby.
The radio?
Yeah.
Excuse me?
The radio.
Radio.
Yeah. This was, trust me, all cars had them. I promise. Yeah.
It's a shame that Laserdisc never took off. Like imagine having a Laserdisc player in your van. Like VCR players, like Mark Davis, the Raiders owner, still has a VCR player in his van.
You can't hide money.
Not even behind a haircut like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, to try to, nowhere to be seen in that haircut. To track those down and then have it like put into your car is just, it's silly. But also you got to respect a little bit. Can't respect that haircut, but.
So Zach, something that I've seen you at events in probably a dozen states and you've been a touring disc golfer. This has been your primary job for quite a while, but you also seem to have retained a level of appreciation for the regional tournaments, even the unsanctioned ones. Can you tell me about that importance?
Yeah, I think it's all about balance. Disc golf did become my job. It was just like a passion that I loved on the side that I just started playing. Like pretty much anyone that plays disc golf, it's like you play and then you can't stop playing. You love it and you go play as much as you can. And I think when it becomes your job, you kind of lose a little bit of that because like you have to do it, not because you like if you didn't have to, I think you would want to.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have to, it's just. Then like you get to points where like you get through a practice run and then you just want to go back to the Airbnb or the hotel or wherever you're staying. You don't even want to think about disc golf. You just want to chill and relax. And like, I think it's all about balance, remembering to play either at venues that you love or tournaments that you love or like a format. You know, I play this year. I had plans to play three different match play non-sanctioned team events.
Okay.
Just because they're the best. There's nothing better than that.
What's so great about those?
It's definitely the camaraderie, I think. Like, you and your buddies, your teammates, you know, like, we're pretty, my team, the lakefront team for Tennessee that plays in VTI.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, you don't know. You've never heard of us? Oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, well, I'll fill you in later. But we have a group chat
uh-huh.
that like everyone is just talking in nonstop throughout like, the day while okay. we're playing.
Yep.
Didn't realize that Jay Bird, who's on our team, has an Apple Watch, and his wrist would vibrate every message. And he goes and he's like, listen, this is cool and all, but you boys got to chill. Like, you all got to calm down. But then when we find out, it's like, we're literally messaging.
More.
There's more. There's twice as many messages. And he was like, y'all suck.
He's got to figure out those settings, yeah. right?
I mean, he said it only cost him like two putts. He said he was like mid-putt. He's like, you know, let go. But, I mean, yeah, just the team feel. Because you don't get that in disc golf. Disc golf is so, you're just on an island
right.
by yourself. When things are going good, you feel like you can, you know, tackle the world. But when things are going wrong, like bad shot or missing putts or just getting the shanks or whatever happens, like in a normal tournament setting, you're so alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of like shakes you. And so when you have that team event, it's just everyone's playing for everyone. And it's just more about having fun and picking each other up than like going out and like, okay, I've got to shred and make money this weekend.
Yeah. And so, if you have one bad match, well, there's eight other people on your team who can kind of pick you up.
Yeah. And also there's eight other people to like give you crap for playing bad also. And like, I mean, I assume that's how everybody is, but our team is, you know, it's tough love. It's tough love.
Yeah. That, I mean, there's also, there's no film coverage of ETI.
Yeah.
Almost always. So if you lose, you can kind of just say, oh yeah, he just hit every fairway. Nothing I could have done.
Yeah. Although there was one year that Marty McFly came and videoed yeah. and I played germ. Cowbell and Lakefront played each other.
Uh-huh.
And he's up on me, I think like two or three with like, I don't know, four or five holes to go. And Marty came and filmed us this match. And I end up coming back, I think the second to last hole, I throw a disc with his stamp on it, birdie the hole. And then the last hole, knocked down a huge putt from like 30 to tie him. And he was just like, it bothered him, you
yeah.
know, like uh-huh. not. And I think what you're saying is like, it bothered him probably to tie me, but also it's on video and he just stormed off. He was so upset. And I was just like, yeah, got him.
So, I'd love to bring up another germ story here.
We could fill the entire podcast.
We probably could. And the thing is like, eventually I'm going to interview him and I'll ask him one question. He'll fill 30 minutes. On his own. No interjections.
He's going to be a 3-hour episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Buckle up, everybody.
And you won't say a word.
No. okay. So last year, VTI, you and I are one seeds.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're about to play each other on Sunday morning. And
that sounds about right.
On the Lair course at Lake Marshall, which we should talk about the importance of private courses later.
Yeah.
I had played germ on hole four, a little dinker shot the day before, ended up winning the hole against him, throwing kind of like a sneaky little soft thumber, but he said he couldn't throw that shot. So I come out there and he's got his entire bag emptied, trying to figure out this 180 foot hole. And
that Elaine King Ace, by the way, shout out.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in my memory, I see Dan Brooks Wells throwing a baby little thumber. Germ's about to play Ronnie Huffman, thumber guy out of North Carolina. And I come up there and throw a baby little thumber. I'm like, Germ, what's so hard about this? And he's like, I can't figure it out. You know, just like kind of raging. He's trying to throw little backhands down the middle, forehands down the middle. He tries his thumber, hits the first tree. And I end up walking on. And then I think you can bring it up from here.
That was when we were starting on
five. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the fridge hole, right? The ditch guy.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm pretty sure I walked up with like a few minutes to go.
Yeah.
And I walked up to that tee pad
that on hole four, where Germ was practicing.
Right? And I know you may remember the details better than me, but I know that I pretty much started giving him crap about it and threw like the little lazy, like overhand. Right.
Yeah. And
yeah,
you can't throw the thumber.
And I'm not an overhand player at all. And I literally throw like a felon on a little, probably like max power tomahawk, which is where you guys were throwing the thumber, and just like hit it perfect, park it down there and just like, yeah, it's that easy. And I just walk off. I'm pretty sure. And he's just probably lost the hole if I had to guess, but,
From what I remember it, he did not lose the hole.
Okay.
I think they both parred, but sad. I think you and I were just like giggling to each other, like, "Oh, we just gave Ronnie that hole."
Yeah, you just know. You just know, like, but, you can tell when you're getting under his skin.
It's great. Yeah, absolutely. And Dan Brooks Wells apparently just like Matumboed a disc that he threw down the middle into the woods while walking back.
Oh my gosh, he did. Germ finally throws and like hits the fairway. It's not going to touch anything. It's going to be down there or long or like he hit the gap. And yeah, Dan just wham, yeets it out of the air. And he was like, come on! You know, he was so upset. Oh man, I forgot about that.
So like the reason I want to bring up this story is not to like goof on Germ, which again, like, should be national pastime.
Yeah.
But to talk about the importance of like community in those like private course or local settings. Like, you get to play with the homies.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a different flavor and feel than being on tour.
Yeah, it's like the soul of disc golf. Like, you're finding it, like it's there. Everyone's there because they just love this place. They love the event, and we're competing. But you don't get those vibes. Like, if you're at not national tour, it's not been a national tour for a while, but if you're at an elite series, like, people are friends, but you can find yourself on cards where, like, it's kind of, there's some, like, tension. It's like, guys are, like, friendly, but they're not there to be your friend.
They only
like,
want to talk to their caddy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've played with a few of those recently. That's interesting.
And it's fine.
I mean, it's fine. It's just, like, don't completely run away from the group and forget things you're supposed to be. Yeah, it's like there's a tournament last year. I don't want to say the tournament. I don't want the guy to remember, but he's chatting with his caddy all the time, which is cool, you know. But like, there's a hole where I'm like throwing from just off the fairway, and so they're standing right on the fairway and they're like 8 feet away and they're just like whispering about his next shot.
And it doesn't matter what they're saying, but
yeah, it's just like, and I'm like, hey, hold on a second. You know, it's just like, give me a second. Yeah. And then you guys can go back to just chatting about your 80-foot upshot. Yeah, it's fine. But yeah, you are seeing that a little bit more. But yeah, the team events, I think, is where you feel that. It's just everyone's there for a good time. Yeah.
Sure. So can you tell me about Lake Marshall in particular and why that is such a special place?
I think the people... And I think, like, when you find places like that, it is the people that make these, like, I think everyone's played at a disc golf property that's like, wow, this is incredible. But, like, the people there and how much they care.
Mm-hmm.
I first met Gary.
The property owner.
Yeah. Yeah. Gary Hutt back in 2016, I believe. Him and his wife came out to spectate Hawk Hollow Open, which John Bisco, that's his family's property. It's another private course. Course that a lot of us love if you've played there. And that was the first time I met him. John comes up and at the time I'm like, Hawk Hollow is one of the best courses I've ever played.
Rolling hills, creek, they cut one tree to make 27 beautiful holes.
No money put into it, just like, you know, there's cow shit everywhere, like, you know, it's just a farm course, but it's just
but a
awesome.
Perfect canvas.
It's amazing. And John's like, hey, I want you to meet Gary. He wants to walk and follow your all's card, and he's wanting to do disc golf big time here in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and his property puts this one to shame. And I remember I was just like,
no way, dude.
Okay, John, I'll be nice. Okay, you know, go meet the guy, shake his hand, doesn't say much, can barely understand him, you know, like he's just got that
thick
real
draw.
Thick draw. And his wife is super friendly, but they don't really say much, and then they walk with us on the back nine. Bisco always did the thing where round two of the first day on Saturday, you would start on hole 10. So we actually played the back nine first and didn't think much of it. This round actually ends up being one of the best rounds I've ever shot in my life. It might be my highest rated round because I shoot a 50.
Which is sick on a high par course.
Yeah, it was... I forget what the par was. It might have been like a 66,
mm-hmm.
60. I remember going back and looking through it, and I felt like I missed two strokes. And maybe... like if someone threw like 500 feet, there might have been another one. But I mean, I almost felt like it was a perfect round, basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, him and his wife walked the back nine with us. And there's this hole, there's a creek that winds through, I think, 12 out of 18 holes at Hawk Hollow.
Yep.
A couple of bridges you got to cross to get over to fairways or different holes. And we're going across a bridge, and I see her walking across, Gary's wife, and I don't think much of it. And I just go help her across the bridge and step up and get up into the fairway. And apparently that moment just meant a lot to Gary. I didn't know at the time. I was told years later, this was probably two, maybe a couple years later, we're invited to go check out this property, Lake Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Get there, really excited, meet Gary. He remembers, like, it's like me, Chris, and Cody, and I think our buddy Tyler Starnes. Like, yeah. I think us four go. And he comes up to me after we play, which at the time, I think it was like a mixture of a couple of the layer holes and then some of the lions. And there were even a couple holes that aren't, they don't exist now,
mm-hmm.
In that original design. And we play them, and it's, even then, it's awesome. Super cool. And I remember, you know, we're chatting around afterwards, and Gary comes up to me and goes, you know, you're one of the reasons I built this place. He said, you did something at Hawk Hollow that, I forget how he worded it, but he goes, do you remember what you did? And I was like, I start thinking, I'm like, thinking
played
of
my a dope round.
I'm thinking of my round. I'm like, oh, I mean, I have some bird. Like, I'm like, what did I do? Like, I cannot think of it, because in the moment, I mean, I saw this lady probably in her 60s crossing a bridge. And it's just like, I think, you know, like, I think most people are going to extend a hand, try to help her up. But it's just apparently that moment of kindness that he witnessed, he said, when he saw that, he thought, if that's the kind of people involved in this sport, then I want to be a part of it. Which, when he told me this, I was, you know, deeply moved. Like, it blew me away, because to me, it was just nothing.
Yeah,
but
that was a fragment of a memory you had to be reminded of.
Yeah, and then he's like, do you remember what you did? I'm like, oh, God, what did I do? You know, immediately I'm like, I mean, I had a bogey on a whole nother.
It's, do you know what you did?
Yeah, well.
Son?
Yeah.
Detention?
And, you know, I did, I do remember hole 12. I threw, you remember the one little short par four by
the
creek?
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah. Throw a great drive, throw the upshot, hit the tree that's like 8 feet away.
Comes right back at you.
Comes right back to me. Putt, cage, comes back to me. Made that one for four. And I'm like, ooh, maybe that was awesome. You know, like, cool comeback. No, I mean, I just don't know what he was talking about. But, for him to tell me that afterwards, it just, I don't know, it's pretty sweet, like, you know, to think maybe I had a little bit to do with, you know, part of the reason he wanted to do this place, this property. But he, you know, him and Trey, who ended up helping him design and cut out holes. I think Bisco helped him a little more mm-hmm. early on with the design. Like, the time put into this place is just, like, the care taken for each hole is just, it's pretty inspiring. Like, because I wish, it'd be cool if a lot of other places would maybe put half as much care into a spot.
Yeah, and it's not every course or every property owner that has that same perfect combination of space and elevation and water and whatever else. But I mean, every course we see does take a considerable amount of effort. But and that's not just like the physical labor; it's the emotional labor of like getting it through the city municipal process.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. A couple things strike me about your story. One, yeah, these private courses are so much a labor of love, and it's vitally important that we as disc golfers like support those whenever possible. Like, don't go to a place and tear it down. Like, try to recognize the effort that went into it. But also, like, just as a human, you are the biggest asshole I know. Like, you have corrupted Zach Arlinghouse, Calvin Heimberg. Like, these are nice people.
Chris Dickerson.
Yeah. That you have just, like, turned into monsters.
Yeah, it's my fault. I don't deny it.
But like, also, when you do something that doesn't have an agenda, but is done out of, like, care and good thought, like, that comes down the line in other ways.
What's up, folks? Derek Skull with Gatekeeper Media, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I twiddle my thumbs.
I'm Missy Gannon, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I practice putt left-handed.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com, and you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items. And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish.
Yeah, like I said, he asked me, and like, he's like, I want you to think about that next time we talk, you know, and I'm like racking my brain for like weeks. I'm just like, I got nothing, you know, and he told me.
Okay.
Because I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I really don't. And then when he told me, it was just like, oh, that. Well, yeah, that happened, but that was like 3 seconds during one of the best rounds of my life, actually. But yeah, but now that we
blacked out, what
yeah,
happened?
Well, yeah, I love saying that after hitting like a big putt, everybody's clapping. You come back like, I blacked out. What happened? But no, it's pretty cool. And I remember like felt like I was playing pretty good, but then we get to the, you know, you finish on the front nine, I shredded the front.
Yeah,
yeah, just got. Didn't get two, but two is like a hole that like no one gets, you know.
No, just
OG Hawk Hollow, but
just the angle, the uphill, the the everything.
Yeah, I think the front nine might have been like a 24, maybe. I don't know. It was pretty good.
Like, I know we're kind of like in the weeds here of this very specific
most of these
Virginia
people don't
course.
Even know what we're talking about, but
like it. A 24 on the front is sick. Like, it's getting everything and giving nothing back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, it was one of those days. Like, and that's, I guess that's kind of where I was going about to say is, like, I would imagine that most people who play disc golf, they've had at least one round. Like, not that everyone's shot a 1080 round, but you've had a round where in the moment with your skill set, your level, it's like, man, that was just effortless. That was clean.
This is what it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of those days. Actually, I played with Weston Isaacs. Mm-hmm. He's actually making a little disc golf comeback. He played this weekend. I don't know. I'm sure you know he kind of stepped away, just started playing poker, hasn't played a lot of disc golf in the last couple of years.
And I know he had been dealing with some injuries too.
Yeah. He played this weekend, got fifth. Pretty decent field.
That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, it's cool to see Weston back. And he's been calling me a lot and asking me disc golf questions.
Ooh, he's got
about
the bug
the tour.
Again.
Right. Yeah, he's got it back. But he was on that card. And I'm someone, when I play good, I don't know the number. I have no clue. James Conrad, you've played with James, he knows. Like, I've played around with James where I make a putt and he goes, nice, that tied us. I'm like, how are you keeping up with all
you
this?
Fucker.
Like, yeah,
I
what
don't
are you
need
doing?
That.
But I finish, and as soon as I tapped in for birdie on hole nine, because we start on the back nine, finish, you know, the little uphill par three, not little, but as soon as I made the birdie putt, Weston goes, God, dude, one more stroke. What's wrong with you? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, one stroke. Like, he's freaking out. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, you shot a 50. You shot a 50. He's just like losing his shit. And I'm like, really? Sweet. Okay, cool. And then he's like, just one stroke, man. You couldn't have shot a 49. It's like, well.
Well, just two strokes, you could have shot a 48.
Yeah, Weston, three strokes, 47.
It's just good math right there.
Charles Bearhorse was on that card too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, again.
That was
just
before I knew Charles. Like, knew Charles. Like, now it's like, God, that would have been a great card to. Because Charles is just so fun. But
yeah, just to cut it
that
up
was
with,
like,
man.
That was like early Charles, like young Charles, who still doesn't say a lot, but at that time, I don't think he said but like three words.
Oh, goodness, no.
Yeah.
So you bring up Weston. I have observed that you and Weston have a very similar putting stroke to Jay Bird.
Mm-hmm.
How did that evolve?
It was mentioned to me the first time I went and played out of town in Charlotte. By an older disc golf guy, Brian McCree.
Yeah.
End of a guy. Raleigh guy?
I think so.
Yeah. And he goes, man, you putt just like Jay Bird. You know,
Jay Bird, Jason Light,
yeah.
OG Masters player now, finished like second, third at the Kingsport Masters Worlds a couple years ago.
I think he tied for fourth.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, hella good player.
Yeah.
Like, great guy, been a great player for a long time. Also, kind of he kind of fits in with the group. Maybe we got it from him. Maybe he started the tough love, kind of real dry sense of humor. But yeah, I never noticed it at first, but now it's like, okay, yeah, it is similar. And then I remember when Weston was the new kid coming to play,
yeah,
in the area, and yeah, sure enough, his putt very similar, kind of curled wrist from like the not quite the chest, but waist, and just very kind of framed up, almost like a free throw in basketball. Like, you're really not sideways. It's, and yeah, we all three putt similar.
The interesting thing about the putt to me is I have a lot of difficulty generating like proper spin and power from a straddle stance.
Mm-hmm.
And all of y'all want to do pretty close to a straddle. It's like a little bit offset, but it's a spin putt. I'm interested in how, I guess what I see is two guys coming up follow the example of the one of the best players in the area.
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot from Jay Bird. He wasn't necessarily one of the guys I went to. Like, I didn't know him well enough to, when I finally got to know him, I'd kind of gotten a little better. But he was someone, like, I watched for sure. You know, if you've watched him play, he generates a good amount of spin on his putt and his throw without a lot of, like, body and torque. So that was something just watching. It's like, well, he gets the disc to stay in the air for a while. You know, nowadays he doesn't throw it far compared to, you know, the guys that crush now. But back then it was like watching someone throw 420. It was just like, whew, that's crazy.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Super cool. I wouldn't say it was to copy him. I think I took bits and pieces from like all the good players in the area, like Jay Bird, Tic Tac, Tim Barr. Those were like the three people I really learned from. And I think I took bits and pieces from them both, but then I also did things that they didn't do at all. Like none of those guys forehand.
Right.
Jay Bird's got a little bit of one now, but like those guys didn't do that. So I think it's interesting how you can kind of model your game a little bit from your mentors, but then also kind of make it your own, you know?
Sure. So what's the next evolution for players in the Northeast Tennessee area trying to copy and then adapt your hacky forehand? Like, are they just going to be like, all right, I can throw this justice on any line, not just dumb flex shots?
I mean, hopefully, you know, years from now, we're going to see like every kid just sending forehand rollers through the garbage, just putting it vertical and sending it. You know, that's my just go-to move.
Hollering Melton as they do it.
Yeah, four, and just sending it. Or Kobe, you know, either one. Yeah, that would be funny. I mean, I get asked when I'm home, you know, we're just not home that much, but you know, like forehand is probably the most common advice that I'm asked for, you know, get tweaked on, and I try to help out anybody I can, you know. But yeah, it's definitely a shot I think I've learned to lean on a lot. I think I feel like when you're trying to grow your game and like expand and like get better at other things, you kind of forget stuff that you do well
because
you're trying to learn stuff. And so have had a few times where it's like, wow, why wasn't I just throwing a forehand here? You know, like.
So how do you grow? How do you decide what to grow and expand? Like, I think there's two ways of improving. It's expand what you do well or deepen a particular skill that you already do well. How do you choose between those?
I don't know. I think I like to at least focus on like what you're not doing well, you know, and then like, It's tough to not forget, you know, to keep polishing what you do well. But like, I think the weakness, you don't want to have any weaknesses in the game, or you want to kind of overall like round it out. And like this past off season, I was attempting to work on throwing drivers better because I feel like that was probably the worst thing in my game last year. You know, we on the tour have to play courses where you throw drivers a lot.
Oh yeah.
And in my mind, that's the least fun shot to throw. I want to play putters and mids and little technical forehands and fun courses. So
your first tournament of the year was Vegas and you threw mids three times.
I don't think maybe once, maybe I just forced a little justice forehand just to say, screw this, I'll throw one. Yeah. And I was actually dealing with some, elbow tendonitis when I got to Vegas. So I played mostly forehand for distance. And That was a throwback, like trying to, okay, how do you throw these forehand drivers and just like flex shots and just crush them instead of just throwing like a hyzer when you get that shot?
Right.
So that was interesting, but then it was kind of fun because I started doing it well again. It took like a few days, but definitely threw a couple cut rollers with the forehand. But no, threw some bombs in the skins that Luke Humphreys was like, dude, what? You know, he was like losing it. But yeah, unfortunately had to do that, but was feeling pretty good about throwing drivers, but you know, it's just that for us is a necessity, you know, where we play. So that was like an easy, like, okay, I need to get better at throwing these. And I actually felt pretty good at Lake Marshall last year, Silver Series, in the year. Like I felt like I was getting, like I had good command and I was starting to add a little pop to them.
Yeah.
And then just, over the course of the offseason, just kept trying to work on it and wasn't throwing them as well as I wanted, but I felt like it was making progress for the start of the year, and then hurt my knee at Waco. So now it's kind of, you know, we'll see where we're at when I'm able to play again. But
try to bring all the skills up to snuff.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, obviously, I'm bummed to hear about your injury. I know you're going to work your butt off to join us back on tour, hopefully later this year. But not the first time that you kind of been out for a couple months, and is what it is, right?
Yeah, I mean, life happens. That's Madison Walker loves it is what it is, and by love she hates it, so I like to use it. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I mean, it's spot on. It is what it is. Like, can't change it, can't do anything about it. Can sulk about it, or we can work on getting right and getting back. So
yeah, for sure. I appreciate that attitude. And you know, I was kind of starting to wrap up because we are approaching like 30 minutes or so, but like, let's talk about your relationship with your friends and how, just like, I like giving an elbow to the ribs to them emotionally is your go-to move.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they fall down, they like skin their knee. Just, you're going to walk up, hold out a hand, but you're also going to like sprinkle some salt on that knee. Like, it's, I think I do credit, we mentioned him, Jay Bird. Like, I think I always kind of had that humor and that personality, but spending time with him, like, man, you better be ready for it. Like, there's a decent amount of people like, man, he's such a jerk, you know, but I'm like, I love the guy. I think he's hilarious. So just kind of taking that approach with your homies, it's like, you know, someone comes off the course and they have a tough round, right? You know, you're going to, you know, you can console them a little bit, but at the end of the day, just like sitting around being sad about it, just who wants to do that? You know, like, I don't know. It's just like, I think I've kind of perfected it. You can't just like go in guns a-blazing when they're not ready for it. But, you know, I think it overall kind of just helps the morale with everybody, yeah. Right? You just kind of...
You got to know your audience too. Like, yeah. you're not going in cold to some raw rookie. You're going to like feel them out a little bit.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about baseball in our preview last week. I think I started thinking about like, the disc golf season as a baseball season, where, you know, you're going to have weird, chaotic rounds. You're obviously not going to win every tournament. Baseball's 162 game season. Like, you kind of just have to trust that if you put in good work in the off season, if you come into each day ready to play, you're going to end up with a pretty decent season.
Yeah, you're going to have a slump, but like, do you sulk about it, or you just trust that the work is there and stay positive and eventually things will turn around? So
yeah, if you treat every season if you treat every tournament like the World Series, it's going to be a tough long year.
Yeah, you're going to crack. You're not going to make it.
If you say that, like, all right, this 3-game series in June against the Brewers is a small part of our season, like, big deal.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Champions Cup is our first major of the year.
Right.
April, what is it, like 20th?
I think
when it starts. Yeah. And I mean, you might, you know, let's say I wasn't hurt. You know, we go, last year actually, it's pretty similar. I felt pretty good about my game going in. There were things that didn't feel great, but had been working on putting, had been working on, you know, playing in the woods, which I think playing in the woods is almost like a lot of confidence. Like, you've got to be comfortable and not be scared, not
for
be
sure.
intimidated. And felt good about it. I play in the woods, and then I didn't have a great Champions Cup last year, and it was, do I go crazy and scrap my brain and try to figure out why, or it's just like, it just happened.
Oh, well.
Like, yeah.
That was the weekend.
I mean, not that you can't be frustrated, because we're all frustrated with a bad round, but it's like, you can't just kill yourself trying to figure out why that one was wrong. Like you said, it's a long season. It's like, okay, that was an off week.
Mm-hmm.
Or honestly, nowadays, you have one bad round. Like, you can have a mediocre round or an okay round. If you have a bad round,
you're out of cash.
You're out of cash
instantly.
Now. Like, I tell people all the time, because people ask about the Pro Tour and talk about it, and they're like, you see the same, you know, 8 people contending for the win, but there are 80 extremely talented disc golfers.
Yeah, unquestionably.
On the tour, at least.
All of whom are capable of winning if
capable
they put it all
together. Of finishing top 20.
Yeah.
All of them. Like, but everyone can't. Every week, like, it changes.
Obviously not.
Like, if you look at, like, who did really good in Vegas and then who did good in Waco. Like, someone who, like, finished 17th in Vegas and killed it, right, and took home a nice fat paycheck, like, they were probably feeling great about themselves. Like, 2 weeks later, they could have went to Waco, shot, like, too big the first round.
Mm-hmm.
They're not cashing, and they're probably just losing their mind. Like, I'm terrible.
Am I even the same player?
Am I? What happened to me? And it's like, it just is like that now. Like, if you're not quite on it, you know, you better hope you can scrap for last cash. You know, like that's that's kind of the way the tour is now. There's just too many good players.
Yeah. So is that something that you and your new role as DD team captain are trying to articulate both directions, both to, you know, your players and to the management structure?
Yeah, it's I think that's one thing. I think one of my skills that I do well is like being able to communicate with people, you know, kind of get across to them that this isn't the end of the world, keep them positive, keep them thinking forward. We have a junior program. That's one of the main things that I'm responsible in getting going. And
sure,
we pair every junior on DD or Westside with a mentor from mm-hmm. DD or Westside. So make sure they're all paired up, make sure they're all getting communication. That way the kids are getting what they need from the pros. But I think it's also important as a pro to like experience that, where you're not just in your own head, but you're helping someone else.
Yeah.
I think that's big time. And making sure that happens. And then also like the camaraderie. And, you know, this weekend where I'm planning like a team get together one night, try to get everybody out to hang out.
Yeah.
At Music City. You know, get them out, have fun, not worry about disc golf, just relax and then enjoy each other's company. And, you know, hopefully the good vibes bring out, you know, good results for people. But at the end of the day, it's like bad rounds happen. So don't beat yourself up just because you don't bring it 1 week. Mm-hmm. Like you said, 162 game season. So you got to hang in there.
Yeah, definitely. All right, Zach, thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed the show and have many, many compliments, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at fish58320. And if you hated the show and have only negative things to say, where can folks find you, Zach?
Yeah, all the socials, man. Come find me. Let me know how dumb Fish's name is of his podcast, and we'll work on a new title.
God damn it. That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com, and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.